Good afternoon. I'm Mark Allen with Gaber.io. New teeth. And I'm here today with Chris Bonatti, the founder and CEO of Bedrock AI. Good afternoon, Chris. How you doing?
I'm great. How about you, Mark?
I'm doing really well. Thank you. So to start with, can you just share a brief background of yourself and your work history?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I started out my career as a CPA. So I worked at KPMG in financial statement audit, mining, great stuff, and transitioned into software development and data, did a master's degree in that, and ultimately ended up, working as a Python programming instructor and as a data scientist in the field of corporate governance advisory. An unusual career trajectory, particularly for a data scientist, but I'm really passionate about programming and stats. So it's been fun, and that sort of confluence of interests, both on the machine learning programming side and the finance side, has led to some interesting things.
Very cool. And what was something we have in common? I'm a Python developer.
Look at that.
I was actually writing Python this morning. So, and I understand where Python comes in with ML and AI too. So that brings us to Bedrock AI now. So what does Bedrock AI do? Who do you do it for? And I mean, basically, what service do you provide?
Yeah, so Bedrock AI is software that extracts hard to find information from public company filings. So think of a 10K annual report. So we're extracting information in really long, complex, complicated financial text, and showing it to institutional investors so they can see risks and understand, the fundamentals of the business before it's too late, before the stock it reacts.
Interesting. So are you saying that public companies sometimes try to hide things in their 10Ks?
What?
Come on.
I think, something for people who aren't aware of what a 10K is or what it looks like, people are aware that generally companies put out annual reports, but the amount of long form textual filings that public companies are actually putting out into the marketplace, I think, would astound most retail investors and most, lay people in general. It's not just the 10K. There's quarterly reports, there's management information circulars, there's 8Ks, there's just a slew of forms, and most of them are really, really long. And even the most expert investors find it really challenging to stay on top of all of this information that's coming out and actually read it all. It's quite physically impossible. And that's the problem we're solving through software.
Yeah, I would liken it to when you sign up for something and you have that thing where you have to look at all the terms and agreements, and everybody just scrolls down to the I agree. It's kind of like that, right?
Right. They're like, let me check the income statement number and move on.
Yeah, cool. So interesting. So, I mean, you're dealing with public companies. You're not a public company, but, COVID had a big effect on many public companies. What kind of effect did it have on your company and your customers and just in general? Because did any regulations or anything like that change because of COVID?
Yeah, the COVID has been mostly quite beneficial for us, actually. Not having to provide an office, of course, and really stretched out our runway in the early days, because we did start out as a research team, living off ramen grants, all that stuff. So that was pretty huge. But more fundamentally, I think it's been quite interesting, because our end customer, they're investors, institutional investors, and there's just been this explosion of interest in investing in the markets, and it's been cool to see. I think our customer base definitely wasn't shrinking during the pandemic, while I think a lot of other customer bases were, which was really nice. And then the other thing that's been sort of interesting to see is, of course, you know, we're uncovering risk, generally risk or often risks that are predictive or indicative of regulatory enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
But something that a lot of people complain about from day to day is just, you know, there isn't enough regulatory enforcement in general. But because of the pandemic, for some reason, there's been this enormous uptick in whistleblower complaints.
Mm-hmm.
So people providing information to regulatory bodies, which is sort of an interesting phenomenon of remote work. So that means that essentially the regulatory bodies have had to do a lot less work and been able to catch more bad guys and all of that, which is, you know, something that's helpful for us because it accelerates the feedback system for people to see the results of the risks that we're highlighting to them.
Interesting. And do you think there's an up? Yeah, I mean, it seems intuitive that maybe the uptick is because people aren't going into the office every day and seeing the people that they're whistleblowing, right? They don't have to deal with them on a day-to-day basis. So maybe they're a little less afraid to come out.
Yeah, it makes you think that, you know, the big reason that people don't do it in the first place is some sort of sense of loyalty,
mm-hmm.
or maybe fear. Yeah, right. I wonder what's the bigger motivator to not whistleblow in person.
Yeah, that would be an interesting thing to look into, because you don't think about it, but yeah, you do see it actually more and more on the news today, that little things are coming out that, like, really? So interesting. So
yeah, it's been just an overwhelming increase across multiple regulatory bodies. Yeah, Google it. I wish I had the stats off the top of my head, but I think it's like a times 10, something like that.
Wow. So that then poses a challenge for your company, I'm assuming, because your volume of information has increased, right? So are you staffing up for that?
So it doesn't directly impact our day-to-day, because we're processing the company's filings, and we do automatic collection of regulatory enforcement, and we just use that type of thing to go, hey, look, we were right, and for marketing and to reinforce what our models learn and all of that, and less so in what we do on a day-to-day.
Interesting. But, and you said you were in Y Combinator. So that was about a year ago. Is that correct? Or
oh, no, that was just now. We finished in September.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you're a fairly new company.
Well, we launched commercially in April as a company.
Okay. That's still,
But we've been together as a team since early 2020.
Okay. And so when you first started, did you have an office, or did you all still work remotely at that time?
We have never had an office. We've never not been remote.
Really? So from day one?
From day one.
Wow. Yeah. And as things are starting to come out, you know, things are starting to come back a little bit to normal. Like I said, there's traffic today. Do you see that you will eventually have an office, or you like this model and you think you'll stay as a remote company going forward?
So we've hired across the country, which makes it harder to have an office.
Yeah.
And I in no way regret that decision. So the two original co-founders, Suhas and I, we are based in Toronto, and we've just hired two people, we had hired two people out in Vancouver. And they're exceptionally, exceptionally talented individuals. And if you're trying to restrict our recruitment by geography, I think that would have been a lot harder.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, all of us are now recognizing that it is tougher to not ever have the chance to just brainstorm in person. And I, you know, from this experience, I do think from a more macro perspective, the future will be some sort of hybrid approach for most companies, and that's hopefully where we'll end up as well.
Yeah, what a lot of companies I know are doing, they're getting together quarterly you know, either like in your case, it'd be halfway between, which would be like Winnipeg, I would think, or
woo,
or yeah, Toronto one, you know, one time, Vancouver the next. That's, I've been to both cities. They're both beautiful cities. I would gladly go back to either one of them. So I think that might be the model too.
Yeah. Just, yeah, having the occasional opportunity to get together and let those creative juices flow, I think is pretty important.
Yeah, I would agree. So where do you see Bedrock AI going in the future? Because you've built an ML AI engine, which can be, you know, you can apply it to different things. You think you're going to branch out on the regulatory part, or you think you're going to do other things with it? Or you're not thinking about that yet?
Oh, yeah. I'm the CEO and we just have no strategy.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Hopefully our investors listen to this
yeah.
podcast. No, we definitely, we have big plans, as one would expect of a Y Combinator company, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But so our fundamental research breakthroughs relate to adaptations of deep learning models to financial text. And those breakthroughs are applicable in a number of different ways, and support a lot of the functionality that we're building out. Are you familiar with deep learning based language models and
what they entail? At a high level, yes.
Yeah.
Probably not at your level.
the famous deep learning based language model is GPT-3 by OpenAI.
Mm.
But these models are just much better able to understand textual content and context in a human way. Previously, when working with text, the computer had a really hard time looking at more than one word at a time and understanding true meaning. But we've completely blown that paradigm out of the water with deep learning based language models. That said, they have lots of drawbacks. A few. And one of the ways that it's challenging, you know, it's been challenging for the community to adapt language models to financial disclosure is there's such a high degree of noise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've read a 10K, mm-hmm. you like by page two, you're falling asleep because mm-hmm. most of it's just completely useless information. But a lot of the useless information sounds very, very similar to useful information and ultimately takes a high degree of human expertise to figure out what is important. And if there's requires a high degree of human expertise to disambiguate, it becomes a really challenging AI problem. So that was just a long-winded explanation of some of the very fundamental but really, really important breakthroughs that we've made on a baseline level. Mm-hmm. That facilitate the identification and extraction of relevant information in financial text. And you can see, you know, there's so many, there's so much to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, financial intelligence, there's such a need for it. Companies like CapIQ, Bloomberg, FactSet are ubiquitous and are used, like, you know, in everyday work. By all of these financial analysts and equity analysts who need information about public companies, but they don't have text processing capabilities to much at all. So there's, you know, our vision is very much becoming that ubiquitous tool that solves information overload in narrative text in much the same way that Bloomberg did for the numeric side of the business.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think your charter is a little bit harder than theirs. I think it's a little bit easier to work with numbers than text for what you're trying to look for.
Harder, but more fun.
Yes, good point. More challenging, but more rewarding, right?
Definitely. So,
well, and I truly wish you the best in that. I think it's something we do need because when I've read a couple 10Ks and it's, you're right. If I don't have a cup of coffee, I'm pretty soon asleep. Right. So hopefully this you'll continue to grow and continue to provide even more and more value to your customers. So I want to thank you for your time today. I know it's past 5 o'clock there on the East Coast. So Officially off the clock, even though you're, right. CEO, you're always on the clock.
Like all startup founders, I stop my day at 5 p.m.
Yeah, right at 5. That's it. And turn off that little thing in your brain. Right? Well, yeah. Thank you again and have a great night.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Bye.